Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Must Be the Place, the Building Science Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. Each episode is a deep conversation with a carefully chosen peer about not just houses, but place. Yeah, of course we talk about houses and retrofits, but we also want to change the industry for the better, forever. Energy poverty, community engagement, industry disruption, societal responsibility, and climate change. It's all here and so much more. Welcome back to This Must Be the Place, your building science podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. My guest today is Shay Bulmer, the founder and general manager of Northern Homecraft Limited, a net zero certified custom home building company based in Vanderhoof, British Columbia. He's also the current president of CHBA in Northern BC and the presidential appointee at the CHBA provincial level for BC. Welcome to the podcast, Shay. Nice to meet you finally.
Nice to meet you too, Shauna. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, this is great. So you started out in the trades as a small jobs contractor, is that right?
Yep, that's correct. So first I, of course, was an apprentice in the trades for a custom home builder and then struck out on our own doing small jobs and pretty much the classic story of a skill saw, maybe a table saw and a nailer in the back of a pickup truck type of thing. And then we just kind of built our way up from there. And into what we are today, which is a custom home building company that's net zero certified. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah. Do you want to put in some wayposts in there for us? How did you get from small jobs to net zero?
Yeah. We knew when we started, I had a partner at the time. And when we started, we knew that we wanted to get back into building houses. That's what we did as apprentices before. And so we knew we wanted to get there with our own company. So we kind of set that as a goal post for ourselves. We made it a priority to get our bonding and licensing all in order. We kind of embraced that idea of doing things right and properly from the beginning. And so once we achieved that, you know, we got our first home build, was a big deal for us. Back then at that time, owner builder homes were more common. And so it was just a frame up job for us. But word passed around, it's a small region. Everybody talks at the coffee shop type of place. More houses. And, you know, we did a good job on those. And then we became known as a licensed and warrantied builder. And we joined up with CHBA. And from that came the opportunity to participate in the LEAP Forum for Northern BC. And so we participated in that, the pre-forum workshops right up to the forum. And it just lucked out. We had a client that wanted to build an energy efficient home at that time. And so we said, you know, this is uncanny timing. We've just got this opportunity with the LEAP program. You know, there could be some great connections and opportunities that come out of it. Are you interested in having your home, you know, be a part of this? And they were. So everything lined up. Yeah. That was our first one in 2018. It was great.
In 2018?
Yeah. We completed our first net zero ready home in 2018.
Nice. So I just wanted to step back for folks who don't know what LEAP is. It's the Local Energy Efficiency Partnership Program that's run through Natural Resources Canada. And it's really builder-centric. And I know that I see it as an absolute fantastic innovation on the part of Enercan in terms of helping builders to level up. And you're like kind of like the poster child. I mean, Jamie Glitchko, who drives the program, I've been in several different iterations of LEAP in different places. And he always brings up your story and your cohort in Northern BC as one of their best success stories. So it's basically like really quickly, the process is gathering up builders in a region to discuss technologies and equipment and kind of identify what they want to explore. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's what was attractive about it. To be honest, when we first got the call, I was kind of reluctant to sign up and go for it. You know, we were busy at the time trying to build a business and a company. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't really need to sign up for a trade show. You know, if I want to be sold to, I can go to a trade show. Right. But then once we gathered a little more information and we came to know that the builders really kind of drive the process as far as what they're interested in and comfortable with. And the presenters are held to account. So it's not just a sales pitch. It's informative and educational. They're meant to come and teach you how their products work for this purpose and not just to try and sell you their products. So we really appreciated that aspect of it.
Cool. Because I think it's a super innovative way of actually looking at this. It's builder centric, like I said earlier, and you have these initial forums where the builders come together and say, we want to look at a whole range of different technologies, whether it's PV or heat pumps or materials like ICF or anything like that. Or actually, I think in your case, there's also some specifics about assemblies.
Yeah. So we had kind of two parts to it. There was a mechanical presentation where we had a few different options presented to us than what we knew of before. And then there was also a second part of it that was envelope based. Mm-hmm. And so we had multiple presenters come in and speak to the envelope end of things. So you kind of came out of it with some really good tools on both fronts. And as mm-hmm. we know now, having got through our journey to become what we are today, it's made up. It's a recipe of many different things that have to come together. So it was,
and I think the cool thing is also that it's very specific to the regions. Like Enercan comes in with this framework, the LEAP program framework, which is to gather up builders, talk about what the things are that are important to the builders in the region who are in the room. And then they go back out and pull in the manufacturers or reps or whoever to talk about those things. And it's different in every region. And I think that's, you know, this is a really clever way of helping builders level up without having to carry the brunt of innovation, because it all affects your bottom line, right?
Absolutely. It does. Yeah. And there's risk involved there too. You know, when you're mm-hmm. stepping outside of assemblies that you're confident with and you know work, you know, to a certain degree, stepping beyond that can be intimidating when you consider the fact that if your warranty and your word is on that mm-hmm. home. So there's certainly something to be overcome there when it comes to confidence.
Yeah. And the LEAP team comes with a whole raft of building science experts attached to it. So there's a whole bunch of unintended consequences that are immediately avoided, because you have that background and you, the builder, don't actually have to have as much behind you before you start considering changes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're still using and maintaining connections and contacts today that we made at LEAP, you know, back in 2017 or whenever it was that
That's
it came
fantastic.
Through.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And do you feel like you've got a better connection with other builders in the region as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We forged friendships out of that process that are some of my dearest connections today as well. So that's the kumbaya part of it, but it's true and it's worth mentioning. So there's certainly something about community and, mm-hmm. you know, running into and meeting people who are like-minded and driven the way you are, but also share the same challenges and hurdles to overcome. It's almost like therapy. It's like free therapy for custom home builders.
That's great, because being a custom home builder can be a pretty lonely existence, because you're out there with wearing all the hats you wear for the business and then also for the actual build. And I know that all the builders I work with out here in Nova Scotia are always six ways to Sunday in terms of how busy they are. And to have a chance to actually interact with
other people, like you said, in the same room who are doing the same things, facing the same issues. I think that's great. I think it, and I know that's definitely what's happened in it with the builders that we've worked with here in Nova Scotia. And those things are really hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly a bright side of it for sure.
So now at Northern Homecraft, your base offering is a step 3 home under the energy subcode. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So BC is moving into, actually as of this December, it will be mandated that every new home built will have to achieve step 3 of the oncoming BC step code. So
we've made like that 20% better than baseline house.
Yeah, that's right. It lines up approximately with, if you were to compare it to a labeling program, it would be around the Energy Star level.
Right.
So our base offering is a step 3 compliant home that's registered as Energy Star. And we've been doing that for a few years now, since 2018.
And you've also been offering higher performance houses as well, right? So up to like net zero and step code 5?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, our highest performing home is a step 5 net zero home, fully solar equipped net zero home. And we love building those. If we could just build those, that would be all we'd like to do. our market doesn't really allow it here just yet. But we're making an impact, I think. I kind of joke that, we're the builder that's built the most net zero homes in Canada per capita. And I don't know if that's true or not. It's just a joke because we come from a super small town, but, we want to put our small towns on the map for
maybe for
having the most net zero homes per capita. I don't know, but, we've managed to build one high performance home a year for the last 5 years. And so that's actually a pretty big feat in our market and where we are. So it's been really good.
That's fantastic. And, you can have a really big impact in a small market like that. I know with Nova Scotia, we had a very big uptake in the R2000 program in the early 90s. And it really did change our whole provincial market because it's a smaller market. And we had a few people driving that change who basically pulled the rest of the industry forward. So you got the opportunity to do some amazing things in your area, which is fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We kind of just jumped both feet into it. Mm-hmm. And since, we've participated in, workshops and all kinds of things, I couldn't list them all. But again, it's just such a great opportunity to kind of get out there, share your experience, and your energy, because we're pretty, we're completely enamored with it. So I like to share that with people. And there's just been a lot of great connections, and I've seen a lot of, things develop and, some other certified builders come up in our area and whatnot. So, it's been great. More camaraderie than competition. It's been really good.
That's excellent. And I think that you're definitely at an advantage to the rest of the country in terms of the code is pushing you much harder than the rest of the country. And you also have this amazing support from BC Housing, which is doing lots of research and training and helping to move the needle a little further. So all the support is there. And I think this is a great, sort of a microcosm of what should be happening across the country, as if BC is a microcosm. But it's pretty big.
I think it's a good province to kind of, to set an example from, because our climates are really diverse here. And so it's kind of like a pretty good petri dish for testing energy efficient theories and science, building science and whatnot. We kind of cover the gambit when it comes to climate zones and locations.
Pretty much all of them, I think. 4 to 8.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in climate zone 7A, where we're based here. So, yeah, it's a bit different. You know, we get a view of what the builders in climate zone 4 build in, say down south. And this isn't meant to be a discredit to what they have to deal with at all. But when you look at the things we have to do to achieve step 5 and net zero in our climate zone compared to the options that they have in northern BC here, it's we don't so much get options. We kind of have to dogpile things on to achieve those levels of performance. So I think BC is a good example of all of the scenarios that could possibly come out of it.
Yeah, and certainly you could take, I'm going to tell you a little story about my, I used to have this huge rant. I still have a huge rant. I have many rants. But my one rant was that, you know, for builders in southern BC who are like, oh, we couldn't possibly take on energy efficiency work. And this is way before STEP code was in play. I used to say, you know, there are market builders in Manitoba who are, they're not doing anything special. They're just meeting code requirements and making people comfortable. And if you took one of those builders' houses and plunked it down in Vancouver, you'd almost be at net zero.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, their hurdles are different down in Vancouver. I mean, Vancouver's a notable market globally, let alone just within a province. And so, yeah, BC, we have a really good look at the contrasts of markets in BC. You know, you've got areas like Vancouver where there is a margin to work with. And then, you know, where we are in Vanderhoof, there's no margin here to work with. Our economics are upside down to begin with. So that's the first hurdle to overcome. And when you go and then stack the idea of the improvements for energy efficiency against that deficit, it becomes a difficulty to try and inspire people to build those homes. So we've made it a point of ours to try and tackle specifically that issue by building some homes that might be considered modest in other markets, but are still quite beautiful homes, and they perform really well and they take care of their owner. And so that's been our objective, is to build a home that takes care of our client.
I really like that that statement. It makes a lot of sense. I have something. My producer, Tanya, has a quote from you that says, until provincial governments understand that the rural and remote communities do not have a margin to work with, anything that would cost even a little more, like energy efficiency upgrades, will be met with fierce resistance. And this one really hits home for me, because we have a ton of small communities here in Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada.
Yeah, and they just don't share the market value that the larger centers do. And so in BC, that's a tough hill to climb at times, because the majority of our population is in the lower mainland. So they are to some extent within the borders of that valuable market. And so the cost to build a home is still less than the value of the home upon completion. And that's not so where we are. And so it's not just that we're being left behind. It's that the gap between our cost to build and the value of our homes keeps widening. And so it's almost twofold. And so every opportunity I get, I do try to transmit this message out there as much as I can, that to get uptake in the smaller markets, and those with rural and aging infrastructures, we've really got to look at that. And there needs to be, some kind of stimulus, or, at least an acknowledgement of that, and maybe a relaxing so that we can achieve these higher performing homes still.
Right. And then I wanted to also talk a little bit about a recent post that you put up on LinkedIn, where you address payment times for contractors and builders and the Lean Act, and how those things impact small builders, because that feels like that's got to be another huge stumbling block to innovation for most of our industry. I mean, like 70% or more of our industry is small business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So of the residential builders across the country, at least in BC, I know that this is true. And I think if you looked across the country, you'd probably find a similar statistic. But of the residential building construction industry, the bulk of it is made up by what would be classified as small mm-hmm. companies, small builders. So builders like ourselves that build, if we build 4 houses a year, that's a big year for us. 3 houses is kind of our normal average. Well, those builders, they operate on small lines of credit or small operating budgets. And so when you factor the BC Builders Lean Act and the timelines that it stipulates, which are great for large companies and big projects, that is certainly more prompt, the 28 days or whatever it is in each given province, that's more prompt than they're probably dealing with currently. So it does help them out. But when you factor a company our size, we've got a stipulation in our contracts that asks our clients to pay within 10 business days of the invoice. And that's just because we don't have the operating capital to manage the overhead of even one build or two builds going on mm-hmm. at the same time. Mm-hmm. So when you take away our ability to set our own terms and agree with our client that that's what they are, it gets pretty dangerous for us. 28 days is actually too long. So right. When you take the model from one province and you transplant it into another, again, the markets are different and, you're kind of asking for calamity there. I feel like there would be a lot of small builders that would be in a hard, hard place if they had to rework all their contracts and their entire operation financially just to survive.
Yeah, and it's not a very good economic climate for like stepping into the bank and saying, oh, hey, would you push my line of credit a little further? Because, it's just...
absolutely not a great time to do that right now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you think there's, do you have any ideas of how that could be mitigated? I mean, other than having your contract say 10 working days, is there
I think so. I mean, leave the maximums in there. There's no problem with saying that you have to pay within 28 days, but don't legislate away my ability to shorten that down to 10. And that's the real problem with the Builders Lean Act, is that it takes away any contractor's legal ability to set those terms. And that's a problem.
Right. So are they doing that because they're trying to protect consumers or home buyers, or is it just a sort of standard blanket?
Yeah, I think the spirit of the act is to protect contractors and subcontractors and then the property owners, because everything flows down that hill. The contractor doesn't get paid, then the subcontractor doesn't get paid. So then they lien the property, and that starts to affect the credit and financial abilities of the property owner. And that's where that's the mess they're trying to avoid. So the spirit of it is good, but it is a broad paintbrush that is being used to try and fix one issue, but the mechanics
causing other ones all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. It's too broad a stroke, and there needs to be a bit of flexibility for the smaller builders to work within their operational capabilities.
I wanted to flip back a little to the LEAP program and things that have come out of that, and also out of the net zero labeling program with CHBA. And that's the integrated design process, also known as IDP. So are you using that on a regular basis now?
Oh, I love IDP. Yeah. We're huge proponents of it. We employ an IDP in our high performance builds. And we've actually participated in workshops where we've presented to the contractors from our region, the mechanics and flow of what an integrated design process might be, because it's also met with resistance mm-hmm. in certain markets. Again, you're talking about spending more money on your potential build before it's designed and estimated often. So, you know, that can be a pretty daunting thing to ask your client to do. Mm-hmm. And so the message with IDP that I try to transmit as much as possible is that it's scalable and that it should fit the project and not the other way around. So I think sometimes IDP, the way it's presented, can be very daunting. You know, you're talking about these charrettes, you know, where you're bringing multiple designers, and these are not these are very accomplished people. And there's an expense attributed to each one of those. So when you think about bringing all of those people together in one place and then having them hash out the details of a project, it's not always feasible, especially in remote and depressed economy areas. And so the message we send is that the spirit of IDP needs to be maintained, and the idea of bringing more people together earlier on in the process so that the details don't get missed. But it's scalable and can be made practical. So we employ a format that we use Zoom for. Our IDP team is made up of really talented people from across the province of BC. Our solar designer, for example, is in Kamloops. Our mechanical engineer is in North Vancouver. Our energy advisor is in Prince George. And so we bring all these people together over Zoom, and we can usually accomplish what we need to within a couple of Zoom meetings and then some, you know, some good focused communications in between. So, yeah, we like the IDP. We swear by the IDP. And we're also quite, proud to have made it functional and feasible for our area.
Right. That sounds great, because I know that it can be a big burden. And it's made for larger projects and more complex projects with lots of engineers and various players in there. So to bring it down to the home builder, or bring it in line with the home builder's experience and the home and the rest in the industry is great. I have done that in my own way here in Nova Scotia, where I pull everybody together prior. And I also wear a couple of the hats myself, so I can do the energy modeling and say, no, this isn't going to work. And then, you know, but it is, it's a really helpful thing to have several heads at the table who can point out challenges or issues. I always tell my clients when working in design work, it's like, I am the cheapest part of your whole project, because everything I do is on paper.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's on screen, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I don't have an actual, you know, figure or data that I've broken this down to, but my feeling is you could avoid 30 emails with about 20 seconds of conversation between a solar designer and your electrician, for example. So all the details that they both need can be had in a simple exchange over Zoom, whereas that could be 30 emails where a detail will still get dropped otherwise.
Right.
So it's the benefits and effects are kind of immeasurable.
And that leads perfectly into my next question, which is, high performance doesn't have to mean high complexity. Can you explain?
Yeah, gladly. We kind of need to avoid high complexity, actually, I think, in many cases in our climate zone. High performance doesn't need to be high complexity. And I think high performance is more achievable if you can alleviate complexity or eliminate complexity. So for example, with our IDP, if we have the target energy performance set, you know, between our exchange with the client right away, then we'll start designing for that right away. You know, we'll start trying to eliminate corners and, vaulted ceilings with dormers and these things that are certainly gonna, you know, kind of kick your butt on the envelope end of things.
Right.
As well as mechanical systems, you know, what's available and serviceable in our area, and how complex does the mechanical system need to be for that home? And so we've accomplished some very comfortable, attractive, high performance homes that have fairly simple mechanical systems in them. And perhaps we'll find other ways to make them beautiful by adding exterior elements and accents beyond the envelope, on the outside of the envelope, and avoiding those difficult interfaces. And so it doesn't have to be overwhelming. And it can be, everything can be kind of reeled in. And so therefore you can still achieve a high performance home, with a capped finite budget.
Nice. So can you talk a little bit about the mechanical systems? Cause I'm really interested in what you're using in climate zone 7A.
Yeah. So we've kind of stuck ourselves out there, and some of the first heat pumps in our area were put on our high performance homes. So we are using heat pumps, cold air source heat pumps, with a variety of distribution methods. So our simpler builds, smaller, less square footage, if they have, common open areas, we'll put mini split systems in there. So we might put one or two heads in a smaller home. In our larger home, we've recently finished, a three-story Alpine style home, like a chalet style home with large dual store or multi-story open areas. That home needs a more complex mechanical system because we have to, think about stack effect and, distributing that air throughout the whole home and whatnot. So it does have a more complex, centrally ducted, zoned, heating system. And so we try to fit the complexity. We try to keep it no more than it needs to be, but no less either. It's kind of a fine line. So if we recognize a home's complexity requires that designer, that engineer, we bring them in. They're identified right away as someone that needs to be a member of our integrated design team. We've done cold air source heat pumps with mini split heads and centrally ducted as well. We always have a backup source of heat up in our climate zone. So the heat pumps have done really well down to, minus 20, minus 25. We have one client that swears her heat pump didn't give out even last year at minus 35.
My goodness.
And so that's great, but they do struggle down at those temperatures. And so there's always a supplemental source. So we use in our ducted systems, we'll use a strip heater it communicates with the heat pump. So it's intuitive. It kicks on automatically. The client never knows that there's anything going on. The house stays comfortable. It kicks off again in the day when it warms up to minus 15, say the heat pump is, then it's all heat pump again. It works really well with the simple systems. We simply put electric baseboards in and we set the thermostat on those baseboards so that they will kick on, when the heat pump starts to struggle. So these are fairly simple systems, but they communicate with each other. And, the client doesn't think about them when they're living in their home.
And I can hear people absolutely freaking out about using strip electric or electric baseboards. But the fact is that you're probably using them for less than, what, maybe 15% of the winter hours?
Yeah, maybe like 15 or 20% on a cold snap. But if you weigh that against the whole year, it's such a small portion. And because of the way you have to size solar to meet the net zero requirements, the odds are that you're going to produce an excess enough anyway to cover that heater and then some. Almost all of our net zero homes are still producing an excess of energy on an annual basis.
Nice. And then obviously you've also reduced the number of heating hours that the house actually has to deal with by improving the envelope. So you basically, when I talk to people about the importance of moving or increasing envelope performance, it's essentially like you're moving the house through climate zones. So it thinks like the interior of the house, and this is all just an analogy, it thinks it's in a different climate zone that's a little bit milder than where you are. And those are
yeah.
all things that mean that you don't have to put in a, you know, your heating season starts later and ends earlier than the rest of the houses around.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So through the envelope, we can, you know, we can reduce that demand so significantly that, the mechanical systems, you know, that was a learning curve thing for us. When we started the LEAP program and we had this high efficiency home that we were going to build for these folks, we had an R35 effective envelope, going on that home, and we had had the mechanical system sized and specced by the supplier. Mm-hmm. And so we presented this at one of our online meetings. You know, we've got this furnace and it's this many BTUs and do. And it was Bob Deeks that spoke up. and he says, how big's your furnace? And we're like, oh, it can go up to this, and it modulates, you know. And he's like, that furnace is 3 or 4 times bigger than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. You know, your heating load in this house is only 28,000 BTUs. So, and that was a red flag for us. You know, and then we started to understand what that meant, and what it should mean moving forward, which is mm-hmm. when we, present a plan to anybody, you know, for quote or for estimate, if they're not asking certain questions, that's a red flag. The fact that they mm-hmm. didn't care or want to know what the windows were and what their performance values were. They didn't care or want to know what the envelope was. They just presumed it was a standard 2x6 wall. All these things, you know, those are red flags to us now. If mm-hmm. we present mm-hmm. a plan for estimate or bid and some of those questions don't get asked, we're going to move on to someone that does understand what we're trying to achieve. So it was a bit of a foot in mouth moment, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Learning.
Okay. Right. But those are things that, you know, everybody is bumping up against. And it's the disconnect between, you know, the rules of thumb and, and what we think houses should be, and, you know, our construction assemblies, et cetera. And these two things, the improved envelope and the builder and the mechanical designer, there needs to be, mechanical designers are few and far between, but whoever's doing the sizing for the mechanical system and the design really has, there has to be a whole sort of almost a revolution in that part of the industry so that the two things come together. I can't tell you how many times I have had clients go, well, we put this in because the mechanical system design or the mechanical suppliers said that what you specified wasn't big enough. I'm like, and what did they use to do that, to come to that decision with? Because I gave you a full-on F280 HELOS heat gain calculation that showed exactly what you needed. And they're like, oh, well, it's because what they usually put in this house, this type of house or this size of house. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At some point you just have to throw your hands up in the air and go, I can't even.
Yeah. Yeah. These are two different animals. That 2,400 square foot house is not this 2,400 square foot house. And if you're not able to open your mind up to the difference in how they're put together, then yeah, you're probably not the mechanical supplier for us.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it would be helpful to have a list of those red flag questions to offer to builders who are moving into this realm? Maybe there already is, and I am not aware of it, but that would be an excellent blog post.
Yeah, 100%.
Are you thinking of moving into this area?
What's that?
These red flags.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure we've put them out there. I feel like they've been recorded at some point, through a CHPA event or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a great idea to have them documented and then readily and easily accessible by everybody would be a huge thing. I think the building science part of it needs to come with it too. you know, it's one thing to say, watch for these questions, but then have someone not understand why it's important that they're asked. And so it's kind of both hand in hand, they need to come together.
So you say that energy performance is investment performance.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's something that I feel very strongly about as well. You know, I think we've done a good job, at keeping our ear to the ground and, being immersed in the industry, to the degree that we can see trends that are coming. And so we've tried to enlighten our clients to that. And when it comes to energy performance being investment performance, it's just a way of exposing them to the idea that the houses built 5-10 years from now are going to be different houses than the base code today. And so for most people in our region, home build represents single-handedly a family's largest investment. So it's everything for them. Do you want to invest that money and then have that investment rendered obsolete just 5 years from now? 5 years is still a new home. So if the homes 5 years from now at the base level, all the new homes are being built to, let's just say, you know, step four, then your home is already obsolete. And so won't stack up when it comes to retained investment value. If you build a home today that could still be compared to homes in the future, new homes, your home's certainly going to retain a maximum amount of value over that amount of time. So that's kind of how we're looking at it. And then if you factor upgrade costs down the road, 5-10 years from now to achieve those levels, what are those upgrade costs? What do they look like 5 or 10 years from now compared to what they would cost to put into a home at the moment of construction? So
it's usually always cheaper.
Absolutely. Yeah. The efficiencies, that can be achieved by doing it at the moment a home is being built compared to retrofitting. It's such a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where most of my life is right now. It's like, how do we figure out how to make retrofits affordable? So we have all these, you know, millions of houses. They're already out there. They're not moving. We're not going to be building another 14 million houses to replace the ones that are not good enough now. But I wanted to just go back to the, you know, this idea that of investment performance and looking at houses that are, you know, in sort of a 5 to 10 year outlook and what's it going to be worth in 5 to 10 years. I think we're in a really different position now than we were even 5 or 10 years earlier than 2022, because we actually have clear direction for the building code, right? You've got BC is already engaged in the energy step code, and the tiered energy code is coming in at the national level. So it's not like, oh, someday in the future, houses are going to be built better. So you might want to actually put this effort in. I think we have a very, you know, it's not just a carrot now. There's a stick in place because we know that the envelope is going to have to perform better, you know, going from step three to step four or whatever we're talking about in terms of the tiers in the energy code and the national code that is going to be adopted by other parts of the country. It's going to be there. It's not going to go away. You know, you can't close your eyes, and it's going to be code. So thou shalt, you know, if you don't need it, you're not legal. It's a not legal. If it's not a legal build, you're in big doo-doo.
Yeah, it's coming. It's not going to be stopped. You know, even 5 years ago, say, let's go back to 2018 when we finished our first one. And at that time, step code in BC was like, it was being developed. So there was a lot of workshops and talk about it. But you ask inspectors in our region, building inspectors, you know, so with this house, we're like, oh, we're going to build this house. It's going to be this performance. We're going to be, you know, ready for step code when it comes in. They're like, it's not going to be a thing. Like even the inspectors were disbelieving, you know, and now 5 years later, you know, it's being the first step of it or the first legislated step is going in place in BC this December. So yeah, it is a real thing. And you had all this time to get prepared for it. And now it's going to be a push for some contractors, I think, to get ready for it.
A good lesson to learn from BC for the rest of the country. Get on board now.
Yeah, I mean, start learning some of the concepts. And if I'm being honest, step three is, I think we offer it as our base offering because there's no reason not to. It's a couple of very simple things that you can do to your build, even in our climate zone, that allow you to make that level of performance. So it's kind of like, there's no reason not to do this. You know, especially at that level, if you're looking at the cost of upgrades to hit step three, I believe they'll return, you know, within a couple of years, almost, you know, it's very short. Right. And it's pretty simple. It's really just paying attention to a few details that you're already going to do anyway. You know, and then having it tested.
I think that it's, Energy Star has also been very successful in Ontario. I mean, it hit 20% market penetration several years ago. So it's not, the cool thing is that this is not an untested step up. This is really straightforward. This was it became a thing because it was, well, in part, as an interim step between R2000, which was a deeper energy cut than conventional construction. And now we have, so it's sort of, I'm going to say roughly towards the middle of those two things, conventional and R2000. So it's been around for a long time. I mean, the irony is that it was, the whole program was purchased back from the US.
Yeah.
All that good Canadian cold climate building science.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much history to be proud of in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I had the really good fortune of, you know, getting to see one of your past guests on your show, Tex. What a cool guy. He's so easy to listen to. You know, he did this presentation about the Saskatchewan conservation home. And about, you know, the history of Canada when it, you know, how it weighs into energy efficiency. And it was just, it was captivating. I was super lucky to be at that workshop. So we've got a lot to fall back on for history in Canada, you know.
And a lot, and I think there's a lot to push forward with. I mean, you know, there is a huge debate in the States right now with some of the people that I'm associated with, and hearing mechanical contractors like freaking out and saying, you know, heat pumps don't work in cold climates. And it's like, well, you better tell that to the Scandinavians and the Canadians too, because, but I mean, that's where it's going. But to hear that, you know, this, and I still hear it from Canadians as well, from Canadian folks who are in the industry are like, nah, they don't really work. That was true a few years ago. And I would have sided with them and said, yeah, for anything other than Vancouver, a heat pump is basically a glorified, really expensive fan. But that's changed. And part of that is due to NRC and their research. Skip Hayden is one of the people that I would love to track down as a guest. He was one of the first people who really started to work on cold climate heat pumps, or at least he was presenting a lot about them. So, you know, we still have a lot we can hang our hats on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think part of the resistance with heat pumps can be equated to poor practices for a cold climate. You know, there's a few things that you could do with your installation that might alleviate or get you away from a lot of the issues that give heat pumps in the cold climate a bad rap. You know, simple things like, don't install them where a snowdrift is going to form, you know, like think about the layout of your
really
property.
Basic,
basic thing. Like we don't mount them on the ground, period. Like we minimum 18 inches off the ground where we are, you know, for the defrost cycle and all those little things, just little things that let that machine do its job and not fail.
Excellent. I have two last questions for you. And the questions I ask everybody. So if you listen to the podcast earlier, you might have heard other people's answers. So the first one is, what's your all-time favorite nerdy, delightful thing about building science?
Oh, man. All-time favorite nerdy thing about building science. I think what I like the most about building science is I like puzzles and riddles. And I think I like arranging parts, you know, to create something that's wholly solid and whatnot. So I think that's what I like the best about building science is that there's no shortage of parts for us to kind of play with and look at, you know, envelopes, and it's mechanical and solar. And if we, you know, bump this wall up to this, what does that do to the size of the solar panel or solar array and things like that? So I think it's like, for me, it's like a puzzle that is different every time. And we just get to play with all the pieces. So, yeah, I think that's probably my favorite thing about it is it's new and fresh on every house.
Yeah. I often refer to it as sort of like haiku, right? It, buildings are like haiku. You have a very clear set of parameters. You need a foundation, you need walls, windows, doors, and a roof. And then you need a few other pieces in there. So, you know, insulation and mechanicals. But other than that, choose your words. Like, what's going to, what, how are those syllables or how are those pieces going to go together?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Question number two. What building science BS, myth, or stereotype drives you crazy?
Building science myth or stereotypes drives me crazy. Okay. Yeah. One thing that might drive me crazy is that high performance homes inherently cost more to build. That's one of them. And yes, some of those upgrades cost money, but I think it's a matter of perspective. People will never bat an eye at the cost of granite countertops, but when you tell them that a drain water heat recovery unit will be $1,800 to install, you know, it's like, well, I can't afford that upgrade. But you could have just gone with Corian or laminate countertops and then had a high performance home. So
right. I think, and switch out the countertop when you have the cash.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're not financing for 25 years that countertop also with your mortgage. So, so paradigm shifts, you know, those drive me, or the lack of paradigm shifts, I guess, drives me a little nuts. You know, and just that, the benefits of a high performance home, don't outweigh the cost investment. That's, you know, that's the other one that I just, if you really take the time to learn about how comfortable a high performance home can be and the different types of comfort that it can offer you, not just physical comfort, but economic comfort and, you know, and then the environmental comfort, or the, you know, how good they are for the environment, all those different comforts. When you factor all those together, there's absolutely no way that it's not worth it. So, just those hard lines that people draw and they shut their mind off. And that's kind of what drives me the most nuts.
Yeah, I can relate to that one. I, for me, it's, you know, the, what's the payback on that? It's got to be less than, you know, 5 years or 3 years. It's like, well, are you going to be not in this house then, or are you going to be dead by then?
Yeah.
Because we have this, you know, there's this myth of how short a time people spend in a house, right? 5 years, it has to be 5 years. And that's not actual tenure of home ownership by individuals in Canada is 13 years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, that puts it in a different perspective.
You can sure experience a lot of comfort over 10 to 13 years in the house, you know? That's a long time to be uncomfortable in your home, I would say.
I think that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Shay. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah.
It was a little intimidating. I, you know, I looked at your list of past guests. And I was like, man, why did they want to talk to me? But, Richard Kodolsky and Tex McLeod and Bob Deeks. And those are like, my building science heroes.
Mine too.
So, yeah, I'm really grateful for the opportunity. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And I think that BC is going to be in super good hands with you at the helm. Is that you're nominated or you are officially there yet as the
I'm a presidential appointee at the BC level of CGA.
Right.
So
yeah,
that means I sit on the executive and get all kinds of wonderful opportunities to engage with the industry in the province and advocate for our industry to the government. And there's a bunch of awesome benefits and things that come out of it. So I'm really grateful to have been asked, to fill one of those seats. So it's great. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Well, excellent. I think you're doing great work. And so thanks so much for coming today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Shauna.
All right. So that's our episode for today. And thanks for tuning in. And also that's it for season 3. So join us for season 4. That'll be in the new year. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in. This episode was produced by Blue House Energy, Podcast Atlantic, and Tanya Media. Subscribe and don't miss an episode. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time.